I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome. It is episode 131 of We Are Going Up, and it is the penultimate show of the season. Violins at the ready. I'm Mark Crossley. Alongside me this week, two men who are in slightly different locations last weekend. Jim Knight was at Wembley, lapping up the free hospitality. How was it?
Yeah, it was very, very good. I was very privileged to witness such an enthralling FA Cup final.
Prawn sandwiches, were they nice?
No prawn sandwiches.
There's, what are you
some duck and some mash and things like that, and some nice cakes and things.
It's like another world,
very,
isn't
very
it?
Very, very nice.
It's like another world. David Cameron Walker is here.
Hello.
You were not at Wembley.
I wasn't.
You were in Tel Aviv.
Yes.
How was it?
Of all places, eh?
I still watched the game.
Yeah, well, I had watched the game and the Spanish game as well.
Oh,
at the same
amazing!
Time,
perfect,
which was wonderful. But the Israeli TV service, once it went to extra time at Wembley, the German Cup final had also started between Bayern and Dortmund.
Borussia Dortmund.
And so they obviously weren't expecting extra time in the FA Cup final, so they kept switching back for like 10-minute chunks between the German final and the Cup final, which was fine by me. But all the Arsenal fans who found themselves in Tel Aviv were going mental, and about 10 of them were huddled around someone's Sky Go in the corner for intermittent periods, which was good.
Brilliant. Okay, well, maybe more stories from Tel Aviv to come later.
No.
Okay.
None fit for court. Oh, there is one. No, there is. It's not really a story, but see if you can. There's a lot to choose from. But I was sitting in front of a player on the way home on the flight on Sunday night back to Luton from Tel Aviv. I was sitting directly
Yossi
in front
Benyon.
Of a Football League player from the Championship. I'll narrow it down from the Championship.
Wow. Okay. Is he Israeli?
No, not Israeli.
All right. Okay. Oh, God, this could go on forever.
Yeah.
Can we come back to this later?
Yes. You want, yeah.
Yeah, let's do it later because I've got a playoff quiz for you now. So can you just turn off your monitors, close your laptop, because it's playoff weekend. We are going to do a bit of a playoff quiz for you. Now, last week we spoke to Owen Bradley.
I always lose these quizzes. I'm always stitched up.
I think we might be in with a bit of luck this week.
Last week we spoke to Owen Bradley and Charlie Ashcroft about Derby QPR. So we're going to focus on Leagues 1 and 2 mainly this week. So all that's coming up in a minute. So hang on there for guests, okay? Let's hope this doesn't go on too long. Right, playoffs. Oh, God, you need a bit of piece of paper, don't you, first of all?
Yeah.
Right.
Scribble on something.
Yeah. You've got any paper, anyone? We should have planned this.
I know, yeah. Hold on.
You should have planned it. I didn't know it was happening.
Surprise quiz. Can't blame us.
Yeah. Right, there you go. There is pen. Hang on.
I've got a pencil over
You've
here.
Got a pencil.
Big tub of them.
There you go. Right, there you go. Okay, right. We're sorted. Should have done that before I started recording this.
Classic Stadler HP pencil here.
Lovely. Okay,
I don't find these anymore.
You still find them. Okay, so here we go. Question number one. So scribble down your answers, then we'll review at the end. Okay. In 1997, David Hopkins scored a famous last-minute goal at Wembley to win Crystal Palace promotion to the Premier League. But who did they beat 1-0? That's question one. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim's already shaking his head.
I don't know, do I? 1997.
Play along at home. It's not like you were born in the 90s, mate.
I know, but
that was around Leicester's heyday. Yeah. Okay, question two. This is quite a tough one. Of the 20 managers who remained in the Premier League at the end of this season, so the final, you know, the end, last day of the season, all 20 managers in the Premier League, how many of them have won a promotion as a manager via the Football League playoffs?
So the ones that were still in a job.
Correct. Yes, so I will include Tim Sherwood and all that, even though he obviously hasn't. So it's not easy, this, but of the 20 managers in charge of Premier League clubs at the end of this season, how many of them have won a promotion as a manager via the Football League playoffs? By the way, if I've got any of these questions wrong because I wrote them myself, please do feel free to get in touch and tweet us.
Via the playoffs?
Indeed, yeah. Not necessarily with the club that we've now. Jim's not happy. Okay.
I feel like I've walked into an ambush here. This
okay.
is chaos.
Question three.
Need a bit more time on that one.
Okay, well, Maybe we'll give you the answers later. Well, no, because then you're going to cheat.
I'm not going to cheat.
Okay.
Crack on with it. I'm going to get zero, so okay. Let's get it over with.
Question three. Only one team have been promoted via the playoffs from all three divisions. Who are they? One club has been promoted from the equivalent of League 2, League 1 and the Championship via the playoffs. Who are they? Two more questions to come. Question four. Paul Dickoff scored one of the most famous playoff goals ever in Manchester City's 2-2 draw with Gillingham in 1999. But who scored for City in the 90th minute of that game to get their first goal, which everyone thought was a consolation? Dickoff scored in the 95th. Paul Dickoff got the equaliser. Who scored Manchester City's first goal that day against Gillingham? And question five. Inarguably, the greatest playoff final ever, Charlton won promotion on penalties after drawing 4-4 with Sunderland in 1998. There was a hat-trick by Clive Mendonca in that game, who I think was a Sunderland fan actually, wasn't he? Who scored the other goal for Charlton? That's testing your knowledge. So those five questions on our big playoff quiz. We might have done something similar last season, I can't remember.
We did. I won. I just like to put that on record.
Oh, did you?
I'm not going to win today.
Okay, right, so those are the questions. Can I have your answers, please?
Can you just give me 30 seconds more on the manager one, because I really want to get it all.
Okay, right, as much time as you want, mate. While you're doing that, I'll tell you what's coming up in the show then. Okay. Later on, we are going to talk briefly about Derby against QPR, but if you do want a full preview of that, we covered it in depth last week, so go back on iTunes or SoundCloud to listen there. This week, it's all about Leagues 1 and 2. Two clubs who've played each other 7 times in the last 2 years, are Fleetwood and Burton. We're going to review their semi-final wins and preview the game with Rob Stock, Fleetwood reporter for the Blackpool Gazette, and David Broom, sports reporter at the Burton Mail. So that will be later. But in League One on Sunday, we've got another cracking game. It's Leighton Orient, who finished third and beat Peterborough in the playoffs, against Rotherham, who finished fourth and beat Preston. So we will be hearing shortly from Andy Brown. Andy is the Leighton Orient blogger for our website, wearegoingup.co.uk, so we'll speak to Andy soon. And in just a second, I'm going to play in an interview we've done already with Dom Howson. But first, the answers to the questions, please.
Okay.
Pass them this way so you can't cheat.
There's a lot of question marks on mine. That's NA.
Well, this is poor, Jim.
I know.
Okay,
sorry.
Right. Question one. In 97, David Hopkins scored a famous last-minute goal to win promotion to the Premier League for Palace. Who was it against? Jim, you said?
No one. I don't know, do I?
DC.
Sheffield United.
Correct.
Good. Hold on, mate.
1-0 to DC. Question number two. Of the 20 managers who remain in the Premier League at the end of this season, how many have won a promotion as manager via the playoffs? Jim.
I guess 3.
DC.
4.
Okay, I'll tell you the ones I've got. Are they the same four as yours? Oh, no, they're not the same four as yours, but here we go. The four that I've got are as follows. Alan Pardew.
Yes.
With West Ham in 2005. Sam Allardyce.
Yes.
With West Ham in 2012. Steve Bruce.
Yes.
With Birmingham in 2002. And the other one I've got is Brendan Rodgers with Swansea in 2011. Oh,
Brendan.
And you've gone for Tony Pulis.
Pulis not get one,
I don't
he?
Think he did. I looked
not
it up. He didn't get one. Okay. He came very close to Gillingham, as we just said, with a Dickoff goal. No points given. That still 1-0 to DC. Question three. Only one team have been promoted via the playoffs from all three divisions. Who are they? Jim?
I went for Swansea.
DC.
Blackpool?
Blackpool it is.
Come on.
They beat Orient Division 3 2001. They beat Yeovil League 1 2007. Cardiff Championship 2010. Manchester City's first goal against Gillingham in 99. Jim?
I don't know.
DC.
Kevin Horlock.
Correct. Kevin Horlock. And question five. In arguably the greatest playoff final ever, where Clive Mendonca scored a hat-trick, who scored the other Charlton goal? Jim.
I went for Chris Powell.
DC.
The lols.
Complete. We've got no idea whether this is correct. We're just stabbing in the dark. Carl Lieben.
Richard Rufus.
Oh, Rufus.
Big header. Big.
Should have got that.
Yeah, big header from
my
a corner, if I remember.
Rufus. Not after Richard Rufus. But.
Well, there you go. DC, congratulations. Here's the
at
music.
Last.
You have won a quiz.
Come on.
On
Go
We
on,
Are
mate.
Going Up. Right at the end of the season. Anyway, right, I hope you enjoyed that. And if I did get any of those wrong, I apologise. That was all my own research.
We'll declare it null and void.
Let's talk about some playoff action, shall we? Right, let's start with a game that's happening on Sunday. It's, as I just said, it's going to be a cracker, I think. This is Leighton Orient against Rotherham. A few minutes ago, before we did that silly quiz, we spoke to Dom Howson from the Sheffield Star. Dom covers loads of different clubs in South Yorkshire, but obviously one of them is Rotherham. He was there for the second leg against Preston, which they won by 3-1 to win 4-2 on aggregate. And I started by asking Dom if that was one of Rotherham's best performances of the season so far.
Definitely, and in fact probably one of the best performances that I've seen, if not the best, from a South Yorkshire side this season. They just They were excellent to a man. They were better than Preston over the two legs, and thoroughly deserved to win by the 4-2 margin. And they just had too much firepower, quality, and played at a tempo that Preston couldn't live with. And it bodes well for what's going to be a cracking final this weekend.
Speaking of quality, the main threat, really, the star of the show, Ben Pringle, with two fantastic deliveries for the Wes Thomas and Frecklington goals, hit the bar with a wonderful volley. He's looked good pretty much every time I've seen Rotherham do well this season on the Football League show. He seems to have been involved. You know, if the promotion is achieved at Wembley, it's going to be really key to hold on to him.
Well, yeah, and he's massively important in the final. He's got a huge part to play. When he's really on his game, he really makes the team tick, and so it's important, like particularly in the second leg where there's no doubt he was the outstanding player on the park. But, again, it's imperative from a Rotherham point of view, if they're to prevail, that Ben Pringle produces an 8 or 9 out of 10 performance. And he's just got so much ability from a dead ball situation or even in an open play. If you give him too much time on the ball with his left foot, he will hurt opposition defences, as he's proved time and time again this season. And, and the fact of the matter is, he was named in the League One team of the season, absolutely deserved to be there, amongst several Wolves players. And he was he's been terrific this year. And, he certainly is one of those who wouldn't look out of place in the Championship if Robin were to get there.
It was those corner deliveries. They were delivered so flat every single time, perfect accuracy. And he just stood out he was clearly the best player on the pitch. And I was just wondering, Dom, going into this game, because obviously Rotherham have lost at Wembley before, 2010 to Dagenham in the playoff final in League Two then. Going into this game, how different does the club feel to the club of 2010? Back then, the Don Valley administration, points deduction. Right now, new stadium, playing brilliant football, a manager who just seems to be on fire wherever he goes at the minute. It must feel like an entirely different club.
Oh yeah, there's a real feel-good factor about this football club, and they're going for back-to-back promotions. This is the second year that they've been now at the New York Stadium. I was actually in the office yesterday with a couple of other Rotherham fans, and you compare this team to that one 4 years ago when they lost 3-2 to Dagenham, and it is completely chalk and cheese. I know that they were in League Two at the time, and now they're in League One, and so you'd expect there to be a huge difference in quality, and there really is. It's just across their starting 11, they have just got some gems in people like Ben Pringle. Kieran Agard's had a tremendous season. Leif Recklington, on his day, is one of the best central midfielders, I think, in League One. And then Craig Morgan has been a tower of strength at centre-half. But, Tony Stewart, the chairman, he has to take an enormous amount of credit for really turning and transforming this club's fortunes. And, let's not forget, they're looking... They're looking to get back into the Championship. They've not been at that level for 10 years. There's been a lot of problems, administrations, as you touched on that. They've had to go through a lot of hardship and difficult times as everyone connected with Rotherham. Now we go into Sunday's match and they've got the opportunity of getting back into the second tier of English football. So there really are exciting times. And, Tony Stewart, he struck gold with the appointment of Steve Evans. He is a winner. He gets players playing for them to their absolute maximum. And, no one should forget or underestimate. Steve Evans is effectively going for his fourth promotion in a row. So, he played a huge hand. When Crawley went up a couple of years ago, he left them in a position where, it would have taken a huge stumble for them not to make the top three. So
people can say a lot of things about Steve Evans, but you can't say he doesn't know how to manage a football team, can you?
Oh, he's really... personally, in my dealings with him, I've found him a joy to work with, actually. He is a really colourful character. For the Rim Press, he gives you some, for everybody, he gives you great material to work with. But he's got a great eye for a player, and you know he's turned so many of the players who he's brought in, he's made them just better and play to the maximum, and they love playing for him. And fact of the matter is, he knows how to get results.
What about Leighton Orient then, Dom? Obviously, both sides have played twice this season, played each other. Both sides beat each other, in fact, this season. So there's not a lot to kind of choose between them looking at that. Both sides are very impressive in their semi-final playoff wins as well. So both go into it with a head of steam. Do you expect it to be really tight, or do you expect both teams to try and play that kind of free-flowing attacking football that we've seen over the last week or so?
I would be really surprised if there's not goals in the final. I look at both teams. I look at the strikers, the players in that final third. I could be wrong. It could be goalless. It might be a ball draw. They might cancel each other out. But I just don't see it. I look at Leighton Orient side, and Dean Cox. I mean, what a phenomenal year he's had. I think 16 goals and double figure for assists. He's the danger man for Rotherham. I think he's the one that Steve Evans will be drilling into his side. To keep him quiet, it's imperative if they're going to get the job done. That I think Dean Cox is where a lot of the danger will lie for Leighton Orient. There's no doubt about that. He's been a consistent performer for them throughout the campaign, and so they know that they've got to watch him very carefully. But then you can't look past the front two either. Particularly in the first half of the season when Leighton Orient started off like a drain. Kevin Lisby and I think David Mooney were banging in the goals virtually every single match. So, Rotherham will be very, very thorough and prepared, and will know exactly what they have to do to counter the threat that Leighton Orient will pose. I have no doubt about that. But at the same time, flipping back to Rotherham, with Kieran Agard, 26 goals, Alex Revels chipped in, I think, with 11 or so. Ben Pringle's got half a dozen or so. Leif Recklington, I think, had his best ever season with goals, 11 or 12. I just can't see it ending 0-0. I really can't.
And, is everyone fit?
They have. It will be in a couple of days where Steve Evans is going to have his next pre-match briefing. At the moment, I think there were a lot of doubts going into the second leg over Pringle and Agard's fitness and one or two others. But as far as I'm aware at the moment, they're going to have everyone fit and going to have a full complement of players to choose from.
And the last question I wanted to ask you, Dom, I noticed on Twitter during the semi-final that they've renamed the press room, haven't they, after one of your colleagues at Rotherham.
They have.
Who's going to be reporting on his last game after how many years?
It's 45 years.
45 years.
Yeah, Les Payne, he has covered Rotherham United. So, it was a tremendous tribute from the club. I'd known about it for a couple of weeks that they were doing that, but it was very thoughtful of them, and richly deserved. He in fact, just before the kickoff in the second leg at the New York Stadium, they also the Rotherham chairman Tony Stewart presented him with a signed shirt in front of the fans, and I'm pretty sure that I heard quite a lot of Rotherham United fans when he was on the pitch briefly, Les, chanting, "There is only one Les Payne." It was very touching. It was a great night, and you really couldn't have asked for a better send off than your last game to be reporting at Wembley.
That was Dom Howson from the Sheffield Star talking to us a little bit earlier, and earlier on we also caught up with Andy Brown, who writes the Leighton Orient blogs for our website wearegoingup.co.uk. Wanted to get an Orient fan's perspective on Sunday's game. Andy was on a train when we spoke to him, but the reception held up pretty well, and I started by asking Andy if he was nervous or confident going into Sunday's match?
I'm nervous. I mean, I was nervous before both the playoff games as well, but we've been playing some awesome football this season. We finished third deservedly, and we're playing some great football, and this group of lads, as we say at the club, they never give up. So, we're confident that we can do something this year. And we've got as good a chance as we've ever had of beating Rotherham in the final. So, who knows? It depends what happens on the day.
Is there a sense at the club that perhaps this is a really, that there's this opportunity has to be seized right now, because if you weren't to do it at Wembley, you know, some of the players that have been outstanding for you this season, Dean Cox, Kevin Lisby, David Mooney, Moses Adebayor, you know, they may not be there. People might come in, look how well they've done for you, and try and tempt them with moves up to bigger clubs with more money, and it could all dismantle this summer if you don't get up.
I think that's a really good point. And of course, in fact, a few of us have said, you know, if it doesn't happen this time, is it never going to happen? You know, in a way that, you know, if you look at someone like Brentford, the way they've kind of built a sort of infrastructure and they've had investment and they've been getting gradually closer each year, and they missed out last year, but they did it this year. You know, we're probably not at that stage yet. You know, we've got a good group of players that have been together for 2-3 years now, and we've got a real solidity and sort of understanding between the players. So you're right, if we were to lose Moses, if we were to lose Dean Cox, if we were to lose Lloyd James, Elliot Omazuzi, you know, those are really key players for us. And, you know, if that group breaks up, then it might take us a long time to kind of recover that.
And in terms of the support at the weekend, I saw a tweet from Matt Porter, who's your chief exec, saying you've sold over 20,000 tickets.
That's right, and Barry Hearn's ordered another 5. So yeah, we sold 8,000 season ticket holders, of which obviously me and my family took about 6. And then we sold 8,000 in the first couple of days. We sold 12,000 yesterday in the first day of general sale, and we've ordered another 5,000. So I'd say that's pretty impressive. And for a club like Orient to take the extra allocation, you know, we're pretty proud of that, really, because we're not necessarily considered to be one of the massive clubs out there. So, you know, we it's going to be good support, I think, for us. And I think, I don't know what Rotherham's ticket sales look like, but I doubt they're keeping pace with ours at the minute.
We've spoken a few times about Orient's kind of form, because obviously you started the season like an absolute train and kind of went off on this brilliant winning run, and you finished strongly, and you know you've got your just desserts in a playoff final when any other year maybe your points total would have seen you go up automatically. So tell us how much of a good job Russell Slade has done, because I don't think that can be understated in this, can it?
No, it's brilliant, because we've had a small squad. You know, we haven't had the depth. I mean, nobody's had the sort of budget Wolves have had. And, you know, it was understandable. They were head and shoulders above everyone in the league. But Russell Slade had a small squad to play with. And as soon as we had major injuries, for example, Jamie Jones, a keeper, you know, that's when we had our dip in form, when we lost a few key players, which is what we thought would happen. But actually, the way we bounced back after a couple of setbacks every time was incredible. And that's a testament to Russell Slade. It's a testament to the way the players react to him. It's the way they react to each other. It's the way they play for each other. And that really shows this season. And, you know, you do sort of feel if it's going to happen, it's got to happen on Sunday, you know. So he's been amazing, though. I mean, you look at the finishes we've had. I mean, this is third place finish, but we've had 2 7th place finishes under Slade and 1 blip season where, you know, we significantly. But, you know, it's been a pretty amazing time under Slade, to be fair, and he's got us playing football the right way, and he's got a stability in there, and I think that's a big thing for a club, especially at our size.
Andy, just looking at the game then, on Sunday, it's quite an intriguing match, I think, because you've got yourselves and Rotherham, who have both scored a lot of goals this season. Rotherham, I think, scored 1 more than you in the league, but significantly they have conceded more than you. So I think it could come down to whose defence is able to, you know, stand up taller against the opposing attack. I mean, how have you been at the back this season, and do you think you can hold out against that Rotherham attack?
Yeah, I actually think it's a case of keeping Pringle quiet. I mean, one of the things is we're going to have to get Roman Bancelo or one of them, you know, probably him, to do a job on Ben Pringle, because the guy is phenomenal. Mm. He's a really, really good midfielder. His set-piece delivery is outrageous. And they've got big lads. I mean, we know Alex Rebel because he played for us. So, in fact, he went to Rotherham from us. So, I mean, we know all about what their forward line and their midfield is. They've got a big side. They're very good from set-pieces. And, you know, the back, they're solid. But we've got, you know, we've got Stephen Clark, who's been an absolute rock. We've got Scott Cuthbert at the back at centre-back. We've got Mattia Baudry, who's a really good and creative defender. And Elliot Omazuzi's been a revelation since we took him back, and he's been one of the players of the season. In fact, he was the players' player of the season. So, I mean, we can deal. We're much better equipped than we were in the past to deal with those, you know, good set-piece deliveries, with those big, you know, those high balls. And if you'd have asked me a couple of years ago, I'd have said that's where we get beaten. But this time, I sort of feel we stand up to the big sides, you know? And also, you know, the more direct side. I wouldn't say Rotherham are direct. They can mix it up, which is why they're so successful. But, you know, they are very big and very strong and very good on set pieces. And I think if we do a job there, we've got a good chance playing around them.
That was Andy Brown, Leighton Orient blogger for our website, weargoingup.co.uk, talking to us earlier. Right, how do you see this one going? Two teams that like to play good football. I don't know, Jim, if you know exactly what the bookies are saying. What do you reckon?
Rotherham are slight favourites, so there's not a huge amount to choose between them, but yeah, they're certainly favouring Rotherham, which maybe is understandable. I'm not sure. Like, it's a tough one because I don't think there's a whole lot to choose between them. On that basis, I'd probably plump for Orient if I was betting on it, because I think it is probably really close to a dead heat, so you're getting more value on Orient. But
would you like to see your local club Orient do it and go up?
I would, yeah.
It's another Watford game for you to get to, mate.
I am backing Orient. I've sort of put a treble on before the playoffs started on Derby, Orient, and Southend. Unfortunately, but I think I would, because I think, you know, we've been to a couple of games this season, haven't we?
Mm.
They started so well, as we spoke about earlier. Fantastic season they've had. I do think this is their, you know, real one big chance to go up. I'm not sure that they'll be able to keep that squad together if they don't do it next season. Yeah, Russell Slade, this will be a culmination of really, really good job. He's one of the longest serving managers now, isn't he, in the Football League? And I would like to see them do it, but I'm just looking forward to the game, actually. I think it's going to be a really good match. I was really impressed with Rotherham.
Yeah, I'm so impressed that these two have made it. Like, it's the final, I think, that most neutrals wanted, just because it's going to be the best occasion.
I was really impressed by Rotherham in that second leg. They were excellent. Steve Evans' face when the crowd invaded. Like,
never mind his face. Did you see his belly bouncing up and down, straining against that shirt when he did his sort of Mourinho-esque run down the touchline? Jesus Christ.
There was a great bit at the end, though, where the fans were obviously too keen to invade the pitch, and they came on like 30 seconds before. And the look of disgust in his face.
Scorn.
Get off the pitch. Anyway, what about Preston? Though, I mean, that is 9 playoffs now.
Even Simon Grayson got together.
I know, in any of them. They've only won 1 of 21 playoff games in normal time. That is kind of Benfica-esque, that, isn't it? Mm. A proper curse. And it's such a shame for them, because they only actually lost, including the playoff games, 48 league games this season. They only lost 8 games. And they've not
gone up. Well, I mean, like we said earlier, a few weeks ago, when we were looking at the end of the season, I mean, just Brentford and Wolves were just so outstanding, weren't they, that it kind of skewed this division. Preston, Rotherham, Leighton Orient, any other season would have been right up there with the shout of automatic promotion. And you know, Simon Grayson's done a terrific job at Preston, and I think they can be really disappointed of how this season's gone. But with them, I think they probably have more of a chance of keeping those, you know, the squad together or attracting more quality additions in the summer, and they should be confident of having a good attempt at promotion again next season.
It's such a small margins, isn't it? Because they hit the woodwork twice in that game, Jack King, Joe Garner, and there was the incident where Adam Collin spilled that shot and it just went an inch
wider. My favourite bit about that was the crowd reaction behind him, because you could just see them as it kind of inched towards the goal. It's just that kind of slow motion.
Hands on the head. Peterborough, I know that Orient Peterborough game was kind of played as we were recording last week, so we won't talk too much about it, but they lost 19 games this season, so you can't really expect to be promoted when you lose 19 games.
And
they won the JPT.
And I saw John Verrill go on a little bit of a rant, friend of the show, resident Peterborough fan.
Yeah.
Saying that kind of he wanted to see Posh get back to what they were, you know, what they've built their reputation on in the last sort of 4 or 5 years.
Conceding loads of goals.
Yeah, scoring loads at the other end, being, you know, playing attractive, good attacking football, and they haven't really, I don't think it's really clicked for them this year. Obviously, they won the JPT, so that's good. You know, they've been positive to take from the season, but I think, you know, it wouldn't have been really fair if they'd won it, but it's a fair reflection of the league form, I think, that they didn't make it through to the final, and, you know, so Ferguson's staying put, it looks like, and you know they're going to have to try and rebuild and go again next season.
Right, well, that game is on Sunday afternoon, the League One playoff final between Orient and Rotherham. Next, though, we're going to talk about the game which is happening on Bank Holiday Monday. 6 years ago, both Fleetwood and Burton were in non-league. Now they are both at Wembley and just one game away from the third tier. So the League Two playoff final, the Cod Army or the Brewers, who will it be? The sides have met an amazing 7 times in less than 2 years, but I think it's fair to say this is the one that really matters. In a few minutes, we're going to speak to David Broom from the Burton Mail. But first, Fleetwood, led by Graham Alexander, of course, drew 0-0 with York on Friday to win 1-0 on aggregate and progress to Wembley, where they could seal their 6th promotion in 10 seasons. Earlier on, we caught up with Rob Stocks. Rob covers the club for the Blackpool Gazette, and I started by asking him if there's a real buzz in the town with less than a week to go to Wembley.
There is. You wouldn't believe it. The number of people who were out Sunday morning when the tickets went on sale. And there's a fantastic atmosphere, not just in Fleetwood, but across the whole of the Foul Coast. And everyone's really excited for this game.
Tell us about the semi-final then, because it was very, very tight. York do not concede a lot of goals, and it was a very scrappy goal that won it. But do you think Fleetwood were the better team over the two legs?
I think if you look at the way the two sides play football, Fleetwood are much more of a footballing side. York are very direct. They do, as you say, defend really well. They don't concede a lot of goals. They probably just about edged it. It was a very nervy night at Highbury on Friday. That Matty Blair goal from Bootham Crescent saw them through. York, though, they came, they gave it a go. They, you know, and they, on any other day, would have probably deserved to take something out of the game, but it wasn't to be, and Fleetwood probably just about deserved finalists.
How do you expect the game to go then at the weekend? Because Burton have been a very tight side this season. They've won a lot of games 1-0. Obviously, there wasn't many goals in the playoff in your semi there with York. And did you expect this to be a tight and nervy encounter?
I don't know, because if you look at the past history of the encounters between these two clubs, there have been plenty of goals. Burton were 3-2 winners at Highbury at the very start of the season. And then the game down at the Pirelli in January, which is a really bizarre one. It started at 4 o'clock after the pitch got soaked by a very heavy thunderstorm. That one finished 4-2 to Fleetwood, with Town actually scoring all six goals. There were two own goals this afternoon. So there have been goals between these two sides and plenty of history in their very brief Football League career.
A brief history lesson there for those of us who don't know quite as much about Fleetwood Town's history as yourself. It's been quite a remarkable rise, hasn't it, over the last kind of 10 or 11 years. Tell us about where the kind of club was back in 2003 and how that kind of progress has been made.
Well, the club back in 2003 was playing in the North West Counties League. Their local derbies were against sides like Squires Gate. And and the rise since Andy Pilley took over as chairman, he came in 10 years ago. And it's just absolutely transformed the place. He's invested both on and off the pitch. Highbury has been completely transformed, but of course it's the team's fortunes in terms of football which have really caught the eye. It's a fantastic number of promotions. They've gone through North West Counties, Northern Premier, Conference North, Conference, and now they're looking to win another promotion out of League Two. It's been an absolutely stunning rise, but there are people still at the club who were there at the outset and are still with them now.
With a lot of League Two squads, the average age of the squad tends to be quite young as well, but you've actually got quite a few experienced players in this squad. Obviously, John Parkin springs to mind. Stephen Schumacher has been promoted from this level before. You've got Ian Hume on loan from Preston. Is it kind of the right mix of youth and experience which has helped Fleetwood have such a good season?
Yeah, I think Graham Alexander's tried very hard to get that right, and his strategy last summer was very clear that he was going to try and bring in this mix of youth and experience, he as well as the players that you've mentioned. He brought in Mark Roberts, who of course has been there and done this with Stevenage, but he's brought in some exciting young talent as well. Anthony Sarcevic, who was playing Conference North football last season for Chester, he's been an absolute revelation and deservedly the club's top goal scorer. So there is a real genuine mix of experienced players who've been there and done it and who on the big occasion are maybe the guys who are going to show the value of that experience and young and exciting talent that he can call on to produce as well.
Do you think this squad would be able to compete at League One level if they were to get promoted?
I think we've had a good indicator over this season that if they went into League One, that they certainly would be able to at least give it a good go. They've played four League One clubs in the Johnston Paints Trophy on their way to a Northern Area final, which they lost to Chesterfield, and they beat all of them. Some of them, those games, quite convincingly. They put four past Crewe Alexandra. They had a very, very good win over Carlisle United, which was live on Sky, and they even managed to put one over on Steve Evans and Rotherham, who a day before we go down to Wembley will of course be contesting the League One playoff final. So they have over the season shown that they can probably punch at that level.
How are the ticket sales looking for the final? Because obviously when lower league clubs go to Wembley, either be in the JPT or the playoffs, it tends to kind of bring a lot of extra fans out of the woodwork and, be that for better or worse, they kind of flood to Wembley. Will we see a big Fleetwood contingent?
I'm hoping so. I think, you know, the club are very confident that, that they can bring in not just the support from Fleetwood that the club's had, but invite Blackpool fans and Preston fans. I mean, I'm sure plenty of North End supporters would like to come down and back Graham Alexander. He's a real legend over at Deep.
Well, they're never going to get to Wembley via the playoffs, are they? So,
well, you know, they might have
temper time lucky next time, yeah.
But, you know, I think, yeah, they sold very well on the first day. We understand that they're still going very well, and hopefully they'll have a really good number when they go down and probably, you know, a record support for the club when they go to Wembley.
We actually had Mark Roberts on the show earlier in the season. We had a quick chat with him. I think it was way back in sort of September time or something like that. And obviously he's a key player in that Fleetwood back line. Burton have got Adam McGurk, who scored twice in the playoffs. They've got Billy Key. They haven't scored a huge amount of goals, but they do have dangerous players up top. Are you confident that Fleetwood defence can be as strong in the final as they have been over these two semi-finals?
I think the back four that Graham Alexander's had for the second part of the campaign have looked absolutely fantastic. He's also got this system that he can use where he sits Alan Goodall in front of them as a holding midfielder, and they have been really effective. I must say it's not just Mark Roberts. Nathan Pond, who has been with the club all the way from the North West Counties, has been absolutely outstanding as Mark Roberts' centre-half partner this campaign. He's pretty deservedly going to take all the Player of the Season plaudits up in this part of the world. But I absolutely think that they can stand up to Burton and give them a good go at the other end.
That's Rob Stocks, Fleetwood Town reporter for the Blackpool Gazette, chatting to us earlier. Let's get a view then from the opposing dugout if we can. Burton Albion's thrilling 2-2 draw at Roots Hall on Saturday confirmed their place in the final at the expense of Southend United. Burton were actually the only side in all six semi-finals to progress despite playing the home leg first, and they can seal their first ever promotion to the third tier with a win on Monday. Dave Broom is a sports reporter of the Burton Mail, and he's been on the show before, and he joins us on the line right now. Dave, thanks very much for coming on. First of all, tell us about that semi-final on Saturday. It kind of swung both ways, didn't it? But ultimately, Burton were pretty solid at the back, and they came out on top.
Yeah, certainly deserved it over the two legs. But at half-time in the second leg, I think we all thought it wasn't going to be their day. They didn't start well at all on Saturday, and it was a huge surprise when they took the lead, and much less of a surprise when they lost it before half time. And at that point, it looked like Southend were going to go on and win, but they reorganised at half time and came out much better. And like I say, I think they deserved it. They deserved their place at Wembley.
How much do you think the experience of losing in the playoff semi-final last season has helped the team and the manager this time going into the game against Southend?
I think it's helped them all season. I think last season's semi-final was sort of a microcosm of their season, you know, full of goals but with sloppy defending, which ultimately let them down, and that's affected them over the summer. So they brought in more solid players, and they've been much more solid all season. Perhaps, you know, not quite as entertaining to watch, but then they've got to Wembley this time when they didn't last season. And although there were four goals on Saturday, that was something of an aberration for the season, really.
Well, that Ryan Leonard goal was fantastic, wasn't it?
Superb, wasn't it? Yeah.
Really anything you could do about that. What do you make of this matchup then? Fleetwood Town finished just outside the top three automatic spots. The two clubs have played a lot, as we've mentioned recently. How do you see this one matching up?
It's a bit of another thing, really. 2 years ago, they'd never played each other ever, despite them both having quite long spells in non-league. And then in the last 2 years, this will be their eighth meeting on Monday. So they certainly know a lot about each other. Generally, over those last seven meetings, Burton have had the edge, but, you know, it's a one-off game, so the former goes out the window, really.
And as you mentioned before, that this season has seen a much more, say, conservative approach from Burton. They've tightened it up significantly and only scored 47 goals in 46 league matches, which isn't much at all, really, but only conceded 42 as well, so obviously very tight at the back. But Billy Key and Adam McGurk have got over half the goals with 26 between them. So there's no doubt about it who the key players are for you on Monday.
Yeah, it's sort of an odd one with Billy and Adam, because they've been not exactly first choice strikers. I think at the start of the season they sort of pictured Rene Howe being first choice.
Didn't we all?
But they've become first choice when they've both been fit. But for the first half of the season, they never really looked good as a partnership. I mean, they were the they were the top goal scorers, and you know, there was a run of matches where one or the other would score.
That's quite interesting, because Billy Keogh didn't actually start, did he, on Saturday? He came on. Was it half time? He came on. Do you think they'll both play from the start on Monday?
I would expect so. I wonder if some of, a part of that was resting him possibly, because he didn't have a bad game in the first leg. When me and Sharps got sent off in the second half, Billy Keogh was the player who was sacrificed so they could bring on another defender. And I wonder if he just maybe wanted to try something new. Dominic Knowles, who played instead of Billy, has shown some good touches in certain games. He's still quite young. But I would expect Billy and Adam to start on Monday, yeah.
One player I wanted to ask you about is Chris Hussey, because I'm a Bury fan and we had him on loan towards the end of the season, and he was excellent for us. A lot of our fans, I think, want to bring him in if possible over the summer, and we hope that that would be a possibility. But then he got recalled from his loan. He's played in the two semi-finals and he looked absolutely brilliant on Saturday.
Yeah, it's an odd one with Chris. He was fantastic for Burton at the start of the season. The fans were over the summer were bemoaning the selling Jack McGomer, and then within like three games they were like they'd forgotten about him because Chris Hussey was so fantastic. But he very quickly went off the boil. You know, he scored three goals in his first four games and then never hasn't scored since. Which, you know, for a sort of left-sided player isn't the end of the world, but he didn't really look like he had the same quality or desire. So they let him go out on loan and then brought him back because of all the injuries. They lost left-back and their left-winger, which are two positions that he can cover. So they brought him back, and we've given him man of the match in two of the three games he's played since he came back. And I don't know, maybe he's just one of those players who has had a real impact at clubs when he first arrives.
Gary Rowett obviously has done a fantastic job at Burton, but tell us just how much of a job it was for him to pick this squad up after the disappointment of last year and kind of get them to go again, because there are a lot of teams we see, you know, make advance into the playoffs, they suffer defeat and then they struggle again. You know, it's another two or three years before they can make another
Northampton, yeah,
concerted challenge. Yeah, Northampton, yeah, being the perfect example. So, you know, how important has that kind of motivation been from him this year?
I think it's been really important. I mean, Burton aren't the biggest club in the world by any stretch of the imagination, and I think having to do it with a completely different team as well. I think three or possibly four at the most of the players who started in the semi-finals played in last year's playoffs. So, you know, that's eight different players. So it's a new team, it's a new philosophy. And I think he realised that he needed to do that he couldn't just go again with the same team and hope to do it again. He had to try something new, and it's worked.
Dave, two more questions from me. First one is Zeli Ismail. Is he going to be fit for Monday?
He's very, very doubtful. I would say at most he'd be on the bench. Obviously he didn't make it at all on Saturday, and he might not make it at all again, which would be a huge miss for Burton. You know, he brings something. Him and Adam McGurk are probably like the most technically gifted players at the club, so when Zelly's out, they do miss him.
And in terms of sort of supporters going down to Wembley, how many tickets have Burton sold, do you know? Because it's quite an interesting matchup, this, because these are two teams that have both spent quite a large part of the last sort of 10, 15 years in non-league. Not massive clubs. How many fans do you think Burton are going to bring to Wembley for it?
I'm not sure how many tickets are sold so far. We're speaking to the chairman tomorrow, and I think we're going to do a bit of help him do a bit of a drive, because obviously Derby got to the playoffs,
yeah,
as well. And there's a lot of Derby fans in Burton and some Burton fans in Derby. And obviously, Derby have sold out their tickets. They sold out within something like 50 minutes, I think. And they got some extra tickets and sold those out as well. So we're going to try and persuade Derby fans who've missed out on a ticket to Wembley to come and support Burton instead. But yeah, I mean, it's not a huge town, so I don't know if they'll sell out their allocation or not in that respect.
David, hope it all goes well on Monday. Thank you very much for coming on.
No problem.
Take care, mate. That is David Broome, sports reporter at the Burton Mail. Right then, DC, you're actually going to this game.
I am.
Who are you most looking forward to seeing in action in this one?
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing Burton, really, because they're a team that I have sort of followed all season after having a bit of money on them at the start of the season. I was really impressed with them last year. As you mentioned, they've changed tack slightly this year. They haven't been as exciting, haven't scored as many. I mean, they scored some spectacular goals last season, didn't they? The likes of Magoma and Calvin Zola. But, you know, I guess Billy Keogh and Adam McGurk are the two players from their side that I'll be looking out for. McGurk's impressed me over the two playoffs. Keogh's impressed me over the last few years. He seems to be a player that's got ability. He doesn't look much of an athlete to me. I don't know whether that's sort of something that he can really needs to improve. He's going to take a step up with Burton if they do manage to get up. So I'm looking forward to seeing Burton, and they're the team that I'd prefer to see win, really. But having said that, you know, Fleetwood, They are a strong side. Sarcevic, who got in the team of the year, is a player that I'm looking forward to seeing live. I've not seen him play live before. But Fleetwood have scored, 19 more goals than Burton. So, maybe that will work in their favour, but hopefully it'll be a good game.
And criticising Jim for living it up at Wembley early, you're going to be living it up in a box, I believe.
I am, yeah.
No. Lovely. Pot kettle black.
Well, if the Fleetwood fans, if the attendance is as disappointing as you thought it might be, maybe I can hop down
at
there.
At least the game I went to is a sellout. Yeah. You're going to go when there's 40,000 empty seats.
I can guarantee you, right, I will be in my seat for both the kickoff and the start of the second half.
Good man.
That's all I can promise.
If you see him and he's not there and you see him creeping in, feel free to call him out on that.
I don't know if we've got any odds for this, Jimmy. Do you think the bookies will be going for Fleetwood and Burton? I'm sorry to drop that on you straight away.
One sec.
I'll think probably Fleetwood.
Tell me what you think. Fleetwood.
I don't think there's going to be much in it. Sure.
It is. Yeah, it is very... actually, very, very similar to the odds for the League One playoff final. So Fleetwood are the more fancied of the two. Burton are the outsiders. I think that's probably, as DC's already alluded to, their more superior goal threat. But I wouldn't necessarily be writing Burton off. I think it would be a good game. I think, whereas the League One player final might be kind of all guns blazing, I think this might be a little bit tighter, edgier early on, and then hopefully we still get a good spectacle.
Disappointing for Southend, wasn't it, and Phil Brown? Such a great goal from Leonard. They got themselves level on aggregate. Roots Hall was rocking. They had kind of all the momentum. It was a really good game, actually. But
they had the chance. Leonard had another chance looked like it was in. And those are the moments, those are the margins, the fine margins between success and failure. But they can be really...
How's Phil going to take that?
...their season.
You know Phil, how's he going to take that?
Well, I think he'll be positive about it. He's a very positive guy. Obviously, his reputation is for being a bit of a character. And I think he has got to look at this season and be really pleased with how they've done. They've got the best defensive record in the division, which is something to be proud of. And, they came so close to doing it. They had a really good run at the end of the season, which got them back into the playoff picture when it looked like maybe it was going to, fall apart for them. And, they're a team that has got to try, as of any team, just look at the example of Burton, as we spoke about earlier on. Disappointment in the playoffs last season. They come back and they've seen what they needed to do to improve this season, and they've done that. So they're the perfect club to look at.
And what a great second half of the season York City had. They obviously just missed out narrowly. I think maybe a lack of goals has kind of cost them, perhaps in those particular games. They've been so good at the back all season. I do think it'll be slightly more difficult for them next year to be as strong, but we'll have to wait and see. Well done to York on a great season. We're going to talk a little bit about Derby QPR in a second. Right now though, let's do My Club. As you know, it's a part of the show where we hear from a fan in 125 seconds, all to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And this week, the focus is very much on Swindon Town.
This is We Are Going Up, My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, I'm Alex Cook, and my club is Swindon Town.
So, Alex, do you remember your first ever Swindon match? When was it? Where was it?
County Ground. I've had to look this up, though. Check this one. In 1990, a defeat to Bristol City. 1-0. I think Junior Bent scored it, so yeah, that's research.
The many years of you being a Swindon Town fan, if you had to pick out one player that was your favourite amongst all others, who would it be?
Favourite? Oh god, I'm perhaps a bit old for favourite players.
You're never too old for a favourite player.
I'm probably going to say just Glenn Hoddle for his playing ability, because, well, frankly, he's one of the best these islands have ever produced, so for him to be a manager.
To be honest, on this feature, most people say like Chris James, yeah. Danny Jones.
Probably the highest level caliber player we've ever had.
In there.
It's the highest level player we've ever had.
Okay, I always ask about the bad stuff. Who is the worst manager you've ever had in your time as a Swindon Town fan?
There is some choice there. I'd be tempted to say Andy King, because he always just kept coming back and back like the clap. But he's probably more circumstance limited him. John Gorman was probably most out of his depth. Probably Steve McMahon, though.
I
hated Steve McMahon with a ludicrous passion.
And what about this season? Carl, obviously, who is a regular with us, is a Swindon fan, has kept us updated throughout the season, and he seems to tell us that kind of expectations have been perhaps, met, if not a little bit more this season. Not many people thought there would be a challenge for the playoffs and just missed out in the end, but it's not been bad.
No, it's not been bad. I mean, expectation at the start of the season by many was relegation, to be honest, or possibly flirting with. And then it got to a point about...
Including the man who asked the question, by the way, who said Swindon would be relegated this season.
I think I said 14th or something.
I'm going to sound like a terrible hipster. It was interesting. We played a lot of good football. We moved the ball around. And they were very young. They faded physically. They faded mentally. And there was a degree of indiscipline, but they were very good to watch at times.
Alex, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
One more to go. Just one more My Club to go. If you want to be the fan on the last ever one, at Wagyu Podcast on Twitter, send us a tweet or email via the website wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. You can be part of podcast history, folks, next week on the last show of the season. Okay, we are going to talk about Derby against QPR in a minute. First of all, congratulations to Cambridge United, who, after 9 years away...
First team I went to see, Cambridge United.
Really?
Yeah.
Against Leicester?
No, when they're in the old League One. That's the first game. Yeah, before a Leicester game, I went to a Cambridge United game.
Wow, well, your boys did it.
Will there be any rivalry between Oxford and Cambridge in the style of the boat race?
I would think so.
This season?
I would definitely think so.
I'm not sure of the footballing rivalries between the two.
Cambridge won 2-1. There's a big... there's a big rivalry between Oxford and Swindon, isn't there? There won't be one between Cambridge and Swindon.
It's quite a long way, isn't it?
Cambridge beat Gateshead 2-1 at Wembley to return to the Football League. Liam Hughes of a header at the back stick and a belter of a goal from Ryan Donaldson of free kick. There's a great vine doing the rounds on Twitter of the bench going up as that goes in. And Luke Chadwick played for Cambridge. He's now 33, which is quite scary in itself. It's quite an interesting story. There's a good article on the BBC Sport website about that because Cambridge are his hometown club. And he decided to leave MK Dons to drop down to non-league to try and get them promoted. And all his
play.
Kids were there and stuff. Jack Lester scored for Gateshead. I thought he'd retired.
Jack Lester?
Yeah. Got a consolation.
Not a compilation.
Yeah, compilation goal.
You could make a wonderful compilation of Jack Lester goals.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done to Cambridge. It's a shame we're not going to get the Hartlepool-Gateshead derby. Is it a derby, sort of?
I think we'll live.
All right, mate.
That's good. At DCW on Twitter. Yeah. Okay. You want to use
paid
for that.
D_C. Yeah. Right. Bit of transfer news. Alan Smith has gone to Notts County.
I know.
Stood in the right. How do you know? Do you know him?
I just saw it earlier on.
On the road,
interesting move that.
He's going to be a bit of a coach there.
I mean, you must look at him, Alan Smith, and he's, you know, he's still knocking about, still playing, and, you know, fair enough. Obviously, he wants to play, but, you know, he could have easily retired, couldn't he? You know, with the injury problems that he's had, and, you know, fair play. I'm Sean Derry.
But he had that horrific injury at Anfield, didn't he, in the FA Cup years ago?
He did.
Sorry, what you said about Sean Derry?
Well, I think it's a good, you know, good, potentially a good move from Sean Derry there, because he's a player that, you know, is very experienced and can help any young ones they've got.
I tell you what is a good move. Barry snapping up Ryan Lowe again on a 2-year deal.
Not for your finances, mate.
I know. Well, it's an incredible week. We've signed two brilliant players. Nicky Adams, who we sold to Leicester years ago, who's been at Rotherham, actually, in the League One. A lot of Championship clubs were potentially after him, obviously played well for Crawley in League One, so he's dropped down. And the prodigal son returns. My Ryan Lowe promotion poster in 2011 has been dug out of the drawer.
It's back on the, off and
it's back on the wall.
This would
be the equivalent. Who would this be the equivalent of Leicester re-signing?
Probably Heskey from my era.
Okay.
You know, someone like that. Muzzy, is it?
Watch this space. Heskey's left. He's left Newcastle Jets. Yeah. He's back in the country and he wants a new club.
Mate, we might bring in him. We seem to have all... I'm looking forward to the inevitable administration in about 5 years' time. I'm just going to try and enjoy it till then.
The equivalent for Watford would have been... We've had this quite a few times. I suppose Helgeson, when he came back a few years ago, scored two and set up one on his return when he joined us on loan, or Tommy Smith coming back in success a second time.
Well, but a player who scored 20 goals in League One for a relegated team last season.
Or, of course, Luther when he came back from AC Milan.
You've got to fancy him to do well with that. Mayer and Adams on the wing.
How much longer can he go on for?
I don't know.
It was superb this season when you perhaps thought his legs might have gone, but... You know, with each season that goes on.
League 2 level, I think he'll still score goals. Very excited. I'm so excited about next season.
I
want it to start now.
I need to tell someone.
Two more things. We'll come to the player you saw on the plane in a second.
A little further clue for you. He is related to the playoffs. He has scored a winner in a playoff final.
Okay.
And narrows it down.
Okay. Derby against QPR is the big game of the weekend. Sorry for not really paying too much attention to it on the show this week, but we did kind of do 20 minutes on it last week. It takes place on Saturday. Final thoughts on this one? You have talked Derby up all season.
Yeah.
How much you've enjoyed watching them. Do you think they're just going to go out and deliver when it matters?
I hope so.
Or have you got a little suspicion that QPR might do it?
I really wouldn't write QPR off because... You know, they do have those players, despite some of them relatively underperforming this season. I think you've got to look at Charlie Austin and Ravel Morrison, as though those are the two players that could seize the moment and they could win this game. And it would just be typical sort of Harry to pull it out of the fire when he's been maligned so much this season, and people think that maybe this is it for him, he'll leave and retire or whatever. Maybe could be seeing him once again in the Premier League next season. But then it'll be a great story for Steve McClaren, you know, to win at Wembley, the scene of his greatest, of his most famous failure. The Wally with the Brolly, I mean, I suppose he'll be hoping for a nice sunny day on Saturday, won't he? But no, it'd be great for him if they get up, and I hope Derby get up because I've been really impressed with them this season.
Jim?
I'd like Derby to go up so there's a close away game next year, because our closest away game is probably going to be like Villa or somewhere in Birmingham.
Oh, my heart bleeds for you.
Yeah, I know. I know. This is what happens when you go from the Championship where there's loads and loads of Midlands clubs. I'd like them to go up. Obviously, as a Leicester fan, the natural inclination is to wish them to fail, but I'd like them to go up so we can play them next year.
What decade did he score the winning goal in? Was it the 90s or noughties?
It was noughties.
Noughties. Winning goal. Championship.
Championship.
Championship player. Neil Shipperley.
No.
He would have filled about three seats.
Yeah,
he
would have been down at the front with the extra legs.
What else? Who else? Give us a clue. Is it late noughties?
Latter half of the noughties.
All right, so you're talking Watford in 2006. Stephen Pearson?
No.
Derby?
No.
2008?
You're getting there, but...
2008? Come on, Jim, help me out. 2008 playoff final, that would have been...
Is it definitely late? Is it definitely that playoff final?
No, I don't know. 2009, maybe.
Just guessing, aren't we?
I can't remember. It was 2000 and... I know 2010 was Blackpool-Cardiff. 2009 would have been... I'm trying to think where I was living at that time. Don't know, mate. Need another clue.
So the team that he scored the winner for, it doesn't play for anymore, but they have subsequently since returned to the Premier League after going up.
Wade Elliott.
Down. Correct.
Wade Elliott. That was Burnley Sheffield United in 2008. Mm. So, what was he doing there?
I didn't speak to him, no.
Okay.
But I noticed him because I was going to the toilet and he came in after me, and I clocked him, he's a footballer,
isn't he? What are you doing, Keir?
He's a footballer, isn't he? Which one is he? And then I sort of wrapped my brains, thought about it, and
remembered you couldn't get on Wikipedia phone.
Verified it with a quick Google image search upon landing.
He probably thought, what's Patrick Bamford doing on my flight? It's got a big game on Saturday. Next week is our last show of the season. Thank you very much for listening all season. Next week we're going to play our pre-season predictions, which is going to be very interesting to see how we got on this year. So we've had a couple of emails from people who are already looking forward to that. So next week on the show, you'll hear our pre-season predictions. And I think all four of us are going to be in the studio for a kind of end of season look back. We'll look at obviously the three playoff finals and just talk a bit about the season as a whole. I think that's going to be out on Wednesday next week. So that'll be out, this time next week, I imagine. When you're listening to this, if you want to check out the SoundCloud page, it's soundcloud.com/wagyupodcast. Read the blogs. There's lots of end of season blogs as well on there. weargoingup.co.uk, and if you'd like to take advantage of that Audible offer, it's still there. You can have it, audible.co.uk/goingup. Good luck to everyone in the playoffs this weekend, and we will speak to you in 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
1. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.